This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
From the ArmeniaProud.com studios,
Genatsit Hayed.
This is A Toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian. A comprehensive look at the Armenian culture, only on lineupmedia.fm.
Genatsit, Parluis, Inchpesek. How are you, Brian?
I am doing just fine.
That's great. Hey, folks, we've got a great show for you this week. We've got Coach Viken Eskidjan. He's the coach for the under-20 men's basketball team. They've been making some headway in Europe, and they just beat Azerbaijan, the Zeris, as I call them, 82-80. And they should have beat him a lot more, Brian. I'm telling you, I think the refs had something to do with that. I got to ask Coach about that. And we've got Danny Bedrosian back on, and Danny's touring all over, and he had time to give us a little history. And he's on there, and we're going to talk to him about what's been going on and get a little history lesson out of him as well.
Cool.
So I'm a little excited about that. And I'm a little excited about you folks out there listening to our show. And you know what, folks? Catch us on Google Play, on Stitcher, on Podbeam. Mm-hmm. You can catch us on ArmeniaProud.com. And what else out there? Toast to Armenia. Toast to Armenia is a great site. You can go to Toast to Armenia on Facebook and even check our shows out there. On just downloading by just clicking on. How about that? Hey, Brian, I was at one of the Armenian sites. We have so many Armenian sites out there, and we were so proud to see one of our teams out there. It's an under-20 Armenian basketball team that's making some headway here with a lot of noise they're making. And they were playing Azerbaijan.
Of course, yes. The rivalry.
Very much, yeah. And you know what? We beat them. We beat them. I watched the whole game on YouTube, and I was so fortunate enough to call around, and our friend Gare, other known as G.
Yes.
He said, you know what? I got connections with the coach. So, I got the number. I called Coach, and we've got Coach Viken Eskidjan on the phone right now. Coach, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We are doing great, my friend, and congratulations on doing everything that you guys are doing right now.
Thank you so much. We highly appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You know, this Armenian under-20 team, you guys have been making some noise here. How did this all start? I mean, how did you guys put all this together?
I mean, it's a long story to make it, like, short. Now, recently, Armenia is trying to develop the basketball in the country. But sadly, there's no league there, and sadly, there's no championship and anything that matter. They're trying to build something, the championship, and there's few Armenian guys that volunteered, and I mean they had a connection with the federation, and federation had my name on the top of the list to if I will be interested to coach the U team, U20 team, When I got the news, like they want me to take this opportunity, I said definitely I'll take it. And we started like that. I mean, too many hurdles, too many problems, too many things, but we managed it. I mean, we have many players from East Coast and West Coast. Most of them are from United States. So we gathered the team, and for 3 weeks we gathered in Armenia, did a training camp. I mean, and went there to fight for the flag for our national team.
Bravo.
And this is the short version of what we did and what we accomplished as Armenia.
Now, when you put this team together, let's back it up a little bit.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about you, that the coach that Armenia contacted you and said, you know what, we'd like to have you as our head coach. A little bit about that.
I've been coaching in Lebanon, I mean, for like past 11 years.
Wow.
I was the Lebanese national team head coach for women's national team.
Nice.
We won the Arab Championship. I mean, I've been doing some noises. I mean, as an Armenian, I mean, Federation knows me. I mean, they know they know who's doing
good,
who's not doing good, or they know the players. Selecting the players, the Federation already had the connection with some of the guys here, like Jack, Galajian, and a few others that they know the players. And, it's hard for the U-20 team because, I mean, all of them, we even have a 17-year-old. I mean, just turned 17. We had an 18-year-old kid also. I mean, they have their universities. Some of them have high school. Some of them have summer school. It was really tough to gather those players, and we were shorthanded. I mean, we were 10 players. We went to the tournament with 10 players. I mean, usually you have to have at least 12 players. We went there with 10, and a few of them got injured. Few of them got food poisoning there. I mean, it happens. I mean,
wow.
Many, many things behind the scene. Nobody knows about those things. But,
made it.
We have the Armenian thing, you know. Our Armenian blood boils in us, regardless of the situation. We always try to fight. We have always like unreal expectations, and this is our ancestor, like, put us in our heart, like, you know what, you can do anything you want, you're Armenian, you have to do it, like.
Yeah,
but we pulled it. I mean, we did great comparing to the time period that we had, you know. European teams, like, there is like tough teams, and it's not joke, you know. And in Europe, they have budgets, and they have training camps. They have a specialist with them. They have everything. Like, they get paid, our kids, you know. It's all volunteer. The coaching staff volunteer. Everybody volunteers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
Coach, is it difficult for a kid, you just brought up 17, with education, how do they still do that and still do the basketball too? I mean, it's got to be difficult doing both like that.
It is. I mean, they already play with the college or their high school team. So in the summer period of that, the period in summer, like June, July, I mean, it's the vacation.
Gotcha.
There's no school. And yeah, this is the only time if they ask us to play like a season, I mean, definitely we can.
But with
the short period of time, everybody sacrificed. You know, once you hear that you're representing your country, I mean, even a school you leave. I mean, I left my job, I left my family behind, I left everything behind, and when too many people called me crazy. But you know, this is who we are. I mean,
yeah,
we have to do what we have to do.
God bless.
Thank you.
Do you also recruit these kids, or do you just get what is given to you?
This time it was given to me because we didn't have time. They already had the connection with those players. We have some of the volunteers here that they know all the Armenian players, and we're trying to establish like and have an office here, so every Armenian will be followed up by the coach and during the season. I mean, it's a long we're trying to have a long-term goals. So to build something, that's why I took few of the kids, young kids with us. So to build for the future. And this is the kids that you have under 20 and under 18. Those are the future national team that they're going to represent at the senior level.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a huge work to
observe. I know that I was reading maybe a month ago that the Lebanese Armenian team, the ARF teams down there, they have a pretty good system down there too.
Yeah, the Armenian team in Lebanon is a huge thing. I mean, there's a big sponsor. Many sponsors are sponsoring that team. They reached the final. They had the chance to win the championship. Sadly, they had an injury with the main player over there, one of the best Lebanese players that was playing with them.
Mm-hmm.
So they lost the finals, but most of them are not Armenian. I mean, most of them are local players that playing representing
the Armenian team. I got you. I was wondering if there could be any type of recruiting pipeline from Lebanon to our national teams as well. How do these kids, when you're getting kids from all over, how do you work them together? Does it work out pretty good from all over the world like that?
I mean, it's very tough. It's very difficult, but it's up to the coach to put them all on one page. And once we had the training camp, stayed for 3 weeks together, you know, that's one of the reasons that helps to bond, and having practices morning and evening and in between lifting weights and being together, eating together, going out together. That helped a lot. So, but it's a difficult job. It's not easy because none of them play together and you need the chemistry. So,
mm-hmm.
You have to do what you have to do. Yeah, it's like you can't be complaining. We don't have this. We don't have that. You fight with whatever you have, you know, in your hand. So this was it.
Yeah.
This is what we did.
Coach, is there anything in the future that I'm sure it's went through your head a little bit, that maybe I can go back to Armenia and set up some sort of a youth program to where I can start seeing the youth start getting a little older, to where I can start handpicking my youth there from Armenia that are going to be really dedicated on playing for the national team?
I mean, I got an invitation from one of the sponsors here, one of good friends of mine that he's doing good in business, and he wants to help the Armenian national team. His name is Jack. Jack invited me prior to this event to go to Armenia to check the facility, check the everything there. And we did a few camps there for the kids. I think we did 3 or 4 camps for the kids in Yerevan and in other cities also. And we're trying to do that. I mean, we're trying to build a bridge from abroad to Armenia to help those kids, because there is a passion and those kids love the sport. And this is my major as a basketball coach. I want to give back to the community. And we are trying to build something as a camp, do camps, run camps. And many of the players are also like gathering some shoes, some gears, you know, to help those kids to give back to the community.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there is a movement going on, but it's not organized yet. But definitely there is plans, and we're working seriously to accomplish as much as we can, you know.
Yeah, and
there is a lot of sponsor needed. You know, we need sponsors to.
And that's what I was going to ask. That's what I was going to ask. That maybe somewhere down the line, I know you guys don't want to stick your hand out for money, but somehow if we get the Armenian communities throughout the world to take notice of how good this program is and how effective it is, and folks, watching that game, and we'll get to that game in a minute. It was really I had a lot of pride watching it. I mean, it's not all about soccer, and we're all proud of that. Yeah. But when I was seeing the Azeris coming back and our Armenian boys withstanding it and pushing it back and still keeping 2 points ahead, I was very proud. Anyone that's Armenian out there would feel the same way. So we have to, I guess, dig into our pocketbooks here. And if you guys come up with some sort of a program, I think the masses will definitely start digging in and possibly helping out.
I mean, there is a huge need, and there is another issue. Like, there is the trust issue. I mean, to be honest, I mean, some of the Armenians here think that, you know, if you're going to pay money or help the community, they think that the money maybe wouldn't go to the right places.
Right.
And this is some issues, but this we can, I mean, we can overcome those things because we can put some real good people that love this. And whoever you want to volunteer, like, for example, we have 6 national teams, and it's too much. 6 national teams, the ticket, I mean, to fly the players from United States to Hayastan, from Hayastan to Romania, each player, I mean, each team has like 15 to 20 between players and delegation. I mean, there is a huge amount of money needed, you know, and the federation in Armenia, they don't have those money, and the government, they don't support that much because government's priority is the war in Azerbaijan. And but
right.
In a sport, I mean we sat with one of the Kosovo, like it's one of the smallest countries, their budget was near $1 million for one national team. Our 6 national teams, the budget was $360,000 or $350,000. This
wow.
is only the ticket, I mean, all the staying, the hotel, the food, the basic necessities for
right.
to gather those, you know, and you know, especially now because we're gonna face Azerbaijan a lot. I think the under 18 is gonna face the Azerbaijani team also. The Turkish Federation helped the Azerbaijani Federation. They have budget, they have money, they have everybody supporting them, and we only want, I mean, support. And I mean, I volunteer. Those kids will volunteer. We don't need money for that. The money is only to prepare the team in a better way, to travel to a training camp with to play. I was asking for higher level of teams. We played few teams in Armenia, Kazakhstan. We beat them by 25. We played against Georgia. We beat them too. I mean, we need some high level teams. Like I want to play like Armenia playing France. I want to play Italy. You know those teams. Even if they beat us, but we
you
learn a lot
experience.
From those games, and we can. Yeah, we need that experience. We need those games. And I mean, recently, if you ask a friendly game from big countries, nobody will accept. But now, seeing the result, they say, okay, we can face those players. We can face this team, you know. They're solid. They're good.
So, Coach, what are you ranked right now? What is Armenia ranked in the world? Under the 20.
I mean, under the 20, it's the ranking right now, I don't know exactly where we are. But since we're a new country, they're going to watch you for a few years to see, and then you start getting your ranking. I mean, the other country that they have ranking because they've been playing this championship for long. This is, I think, our second time participating in the FIBA. So
right.
They're not sure if we're going to continue. They want to see that this team is always Armenia. I mean, for example, Armenia, if started playing in Europe, they have to play every time. You can't withdraw. If you withdraw, there's a penalty, and they will ban you to participate later on.
I see.
Have to participate. You know, at least participate. But why not participate to compete? You know, why not participate
to
and to win?
You're right. You're right. Last I checked, I thought we were in the top 20. I thought we were number 17.
We are number 17.
Yeah.
We are number 17, but we had a tough group. There was another easy group. I mean, there is a team that we can beat them by 20. They ranked 12th, but those teams are participating every time. They're getting points from participating and advancing. I mean, our ranking can definitely be among the top 10. As a level, we can be top 10, but we need a good preparation. We need,
right.
I mean, we need a backup, you know. It's not like always, it's not an individual sport. It's not like you go fight, give your heart out, and that's it. You have to fight with 12 players and the coaches and, you know, the staff. You have to be all organized, you know, advanced, playing in an advanced level. I mean, there's many, many things that should be done so we can participate properly as the other teams do, you know.
Right. That's for sure. That's for sure. Just behind the scenes is what you're saying that the team would need. I watched that game against Azerbaijan, and I got to tell you, man, I thought this game was a lot closer than what the score here gave it 82-80. I thought I thought we beat this team by 15 to 16 points. There was this, I don't want, and you don't have to answer this because you might get in trouble with the officiating, but I thought every time our guys did something, it was tight. They called it tight on our side. But it seemed to me like they wanted this game to be a little tighter on the scoreboard than what it was supposed to be. Because we had this team really beat. This 82-80 definitely does not show the right score here, my friends, because the Azeris weren't playing like the Armenians. The Armenians were definitely outworking, outplaying in every fashion of this game here. I mean, we were really beating these guys in every aspect of the game. And it seemed like that referee that was calling something wrong on our side every time. Every time they were going to the free throw line, it just seemed like that.
It was like that. It was like that, and we called the FIBA, and they banned the referee. One of the referees is from Macedonia, and Macedonia is a country that, with a few hundred dollars, you can buy whoever you want.
Unbelievable.
And the International Federation of Basketball agreed that there was something. We are not 100% sure, but there was some betting on the game.
There was betting.
To keep the margin closed, you know, because they gave four fouls on our only center, and we played without our main player for almost half of the game.
They
were trying to make us lose that game.
But no,
we fought, and it was a fight. It wasn't a basketball game. It was like, I'm sure it wasn't enjoyable to watch it because the referee were trying to mess with our head. And I was always trying to tell and keep the players under control, you know, keep control their emotions.
Yeah.
We were determined. I mean, I said before the game, we're not going out of this gym without the W. We're not. We're staying here until we get the W. And thank God. I mean, God blessed us. You know, it's a tight game, and they tried and tried and tried, and we kept coming back and holding our ground. And eventually, we gave back to Armenia.
It was unbelievable.
I mean, it was our game. I mean, it wasn't their game. It was our game, and
It was unbelievable because when the game started, you're looking at this and going, we're going to beat these guys by 16, 17. And then all of a sudden, you've seen the referees getting involved. And it was one, the referee on the side that was the Azeri side, that was when the Azeris were on offense in the first half. He would call just the fouls that didn't seem like. In any case, we won 82-80. What I'm trying to say, folks, is that this is a good team, and they're stout. They play hard. They play good together. They got a great outside shooting on the inside. Wow, we got an inside game too. We got some tall players inside too.
Yeah.
So,
it's definitely a team to build, and definitely we can add a few players from here and there. I'm looking to check some players in Canada, for example. I think I'm sure that we'll find Armenians from Canada or even Australia. Why not? I mean, together those Armenians, and in a few years to have a solid team to compete with the European top level teams. You know, this is my dream. I mean, this is what I.
Why not? Why not, coach? Yeah. Why not, coach? And you know what? Do you have some sort of a site that us Armenians can maybe pitch in, maybe help out some way that financially, if you give us is there a .com or a phone number or something like that that we can get involved in?
I'm not the right person for that. I will ask about it.
Ask about it, and then
in money or sponsoring or anything. I'm away from that. I just keep it strictly basketball. So I'm definitely will find out. I will definitely
find out. Find out. Let me know. Yeah. Give me a call back on that, yeah. And I'll let our people know. We need to get this out to the public. You know what? It costs money to go to Australia to get these players. It costs money to go to Canada. And I mean, our coach here, you know, he's doing all this voluntarily, folks. So you know what? If we want our Armenian flag hoisted up as first place and be proud, there's a little cost behind this too. It just doesn't come voluntarily. I mean, there's a price being paid for this. So we love what you're doing, and God bless, and tell all the players that we appreciate everything they're doing. And again, you're a friend of the show. Anytime you got anything, we'd love to have you on.
Thank you so much. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, how you guys gathering all the Armenians, and our voice has been heard right now. I mean, let's do this for Armenia. Let's do this for our country. And everybody loves, I mean, you have Armenian blood in you. You love your country. You want to serve your country. You might serve in maybe with your effort, with your expertise, maybe from your pocket, you know. And we can organize this in a professional way. We have to establish something, you know. We have to. We like to have sports, you know, team sports. Every time Armenia plays, you know, everybody expects to win. But hey, everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. You know, there is a price for it. You have to pay the price so we can achieve more and more, you know. And we're not far away from those top teams, and we can do it. Once we are together, we can do many things. United, we stand.
United, we stand. What is that we say, Brian? United, we stand. Divided, we fall. Coach Vikan Eskigian, my friend, thank you so much for being on the show. Don't hang up yet. Don't hang up. I want to talk to you off the air too. Folks, it's a treat to have this type of, I mean, we hear all the time about our athletes, our countrymen doing something out there, and we got something right here special. Let's keep it intact and let's make it happen. Thank you, Coach.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, you know what, man? My heart goes out to these guys. I mean, they do all this voluntarily work, you know, and they bust butt. And Coach here, Coach Vikan, him and his group, they recruit these kids, and even these kids, they're playing voluntary basis, and they're making things happen.
Yeah.
And so God bless them, and we wish them nothing but the best. So in any case, let's get to our next interview here.
Well, I tell you what, Brian, our next segment is one of my favorite segments.
I'm always excited about this segment.
Because a couple couple shows ago, we had that whole thing about history and the culture.
Yeah, the pre-Christian history of Armenia.
Right,
yes.
Right. And now we've got our Danny Bedrosian back on our show.
We got Danny back.
And Danny, great to have you on board, man.
Glad to be back. Looking forward to doing this again many more times.
What's been going on with you?
Not much. Just been well, actually quite a bit. Just got back from Europe and North America tour for the summer with George Clinton and P-Funk, and then we have a little bit of time off. We're going back out towards the West Coast this week for another couple months. So been keeping pretty busy.
Well, we have a lot of fans out in the West Coast. Would you like to give a shout-out to where you're going to be?
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to be actually all over the West Coast. We're playing Seattle. We're playing Portland, L.A., San Diego, San Jose, Petaluma, Laguna Beach, San Francisco, and Tempe, Arizona. And you can go to my website to see the exact venues and dates. It's DannyBedrosian.com. Do the tour dates page on there and see exactly where we'll be on which days, because there's quite a few shows on the West Coast coming up.
And that was DannyBedrosian.com?
Yep, that's right.
Okay. All right, perfect. Yep. And okay, perfect. So, folks, if you get a chance, all the dates are there, and give Danny a shot. It's a beautiful show, and the guy's been doing it with how many people are in your band?
In George Clinton's band, it's about 20 something people, so it's a big
wow.
It's a big show, you know. And I'm the keyboard player, and nice. I've been with George about 15 years, but the band's been around about 62 years now. So
wow,
running
wow.
band in American history. It's really cool.
All right, bravo, Danny. There's something else that we love from you, buddy, and that's a little bit of our history, and I kind of just kick back and listen to it. And what do you have for us this week?
So in my attempts to try to get some more older Armenian history into the books, because for the longest time we were doing it by the date, but as we know, going back further, the Gregorian and Julian calendars are very different. So dates become more abstract as we go back, you know, months and days and things like that. So I'm trying to go more by years. So now I'm using this day as an excuse to do sort of my little segment on the Paulicians or the Paulicians, depending on what part of Armenia you're from. They're basically a Gnostic religious sect that was founded 1,460 years ago, does not exist anymore, but is really important and very little talked about in terms of the history of Gnosticism, both in Armenia and Persia and also in the Byzantine Empire and later in Europe. They were called Paulicians because they're supposedly named after St. Paul, but not St. Paul of Tarsus, a different St. Paul from Samosata, which is a city which was once in western, where sort of western Armenia and Syria meet. And he was a teacher of trying to get Christianity back to its sort of original ways. So we're talking about 1,460 years ago. So it was founded, I believe, in around 657 A.D. And immediately the Catholicos and the Armenian Apostolic Church was vehemently against this sect, of course, because this sect professed many what we can call peculiarities in terms of their devotion to Christianity. Again, in these times, all the Christian sects were fighting with each other about who was right, who believed in the right version of this, that, and the other. And oftentimes what we call Christological debates took the center stage in theological discourse. But the Paulicians, it's no different. They were considered to be sort of heretics, both by the Greek Orthodox Church, which was in charge in the Byzantine Empire, and also the Armenian Church and other Christian churches. But it's important to note that the Paulicians themselves are overwhelmingly Armenian in origin. Almost all of their original followers, as well as all their original leaders, were Armenians. And they were Armenians largely from the village of Tondrak, which is right near a once active volcano, which is now in eastern Turkey, not too far from Van. So sometimes they're called Tondrakians erroneously as well. But the Paulicians, their first sort of leader, his name was Constantine, and he changed his name to Silvanus to name himself after one of Paul's students. He was stoned to death by the Imperial Order of the Byzantine Empire, and ironically, this is one of the strangest parts of the story, the guy who actually ordered his death, the judge who ordered his death, a man by the name of Simeon, converted to Paulicianism after doing such this act to the first leader, and actually became the second leader of the Paulician sect. So the guy who it would be almost like if Pontius right. Pilate became the leader of the Christian church or something. You know what I mean? So it's very interesting. The
how
guy
did
who,
they,
who
how did they even get how did they even believe him after he just killed their leader
in a very Solomon-esque kind of way. You know, a lot of these early sects of Christianity believed in the sort of the rites of passage through conversion and all these things. So this guy obviously convinced the followers of Paulicianism that he had done the wrong thing, and he felt very badly about it, and he became a convert, and then later changed his name to Titus and became the second leader of the Paulicians. However, his fate was no better than the first leader. He was burned to death by the Byzantines.
Jesus.
Now, why all this hatred? Why all this this disgust with this group? Well, the major difference between the Paulician sect and most other sects of this time is that the Paulicians actually rejected the Old Testament, believed it was just a bunch of old fables and it didn't have any place in the modern Christian the modern Christian word, and it also rejected a lot of stuff even in the New Testament, only approving chiefly the Gospels of St. Luke, the Epistles of St. Paul, and some of the other Gospels, but not all. It has been widely debated exactly which Gospels are accepted by the Paulicians, because this sect, like many Gnostic sects of the 7th to 14th century, most of their records were burned by the major churches, the major hierarchical churches, in an attempt to wipe them out from existence. So a lot of writers and thinkers actually disagree to how many books they believed were canon. However, we know that they totally rejected the Old Testament, and they totally rejected some of the New Testament. They also believed that there was, it was sort of a something that they called dualism, where they believed there's almost kind of like two gods. There's a God who created the world we know, and then there's the God of heaven who creates souls. I would suppose that Jesus would have been one of those souls, because the Paulicians believed that Jesus was more of an angel that came down from heaven, and the baptism in the Eucharist was basically hearing his words as an angel. So their interpretations of Christianity were very different than the established churches. However, in many ways, they were older to the original Christian ways in some ways. For instance, they rejected the use of the cross as a symbol. They thought it was perverse to have that symbol be the symbol of the Christian faith. They themselves had a very interesting insignia that was almost like a man with a rooster's head and a snake, two snake tails, and that was the insignia of their, I guess, of their group, you know. And I don't know the exact significance of it. Again, a lot of Paulicianism is really lost in the burning at the stake of so many of these guys. Many Byzantine emperors persecuted the Paulicians, Constantine IV, Justinian II, Michael I, Leo V. But there were a couple of Byzantine emperors like John Zamyski's and some others that not only protected them, but also resettled them in other parts of the Byzantine Empire to be a more reliable population in areas where the Byzantines were fighting. So Bulgaria at that time was an area where the Byzantines had a lot of trouble. The Bulgarians were being very troublesome in their imperial lands, and they were fighting the Bulgarians a lot. So they resettled the Paulicians from Armenia, from Byzantine Armenia, in Bulgaria. And most of the Paulicians ended up in Bulgaria after this move. It's important to note, too, that all of these Byzantine emperors are Armenian. So,
wow.
There's really no distinction between, there should be no racial distinction between the Armenian Byzantine emperors who were professing a Greek version of Christianity, the Armenian apostolics who lived in the kingdom of Armenia that belonged to the Armenian church, and these Paulicians who were considered a heretical sect. They were all ethnically Armenians. It's just the religion, the version of the religion that they chose, you know. And after moving to different places in Western Turkey, they were eventually settled in Southern Bulgaria, where over time they, and when I say over time, I mean much long after they lost their religion, most of them converted to Catholicism. Some converted to Islam and some converted to Eastern Orthodox Christianity. But the vast majority of them did convert to Catholicism. And today they call them Banat Bulgarians, and it is named after one of the two sects, because at one point Paulicianism split in two. They split into the Banats and the Sergites. And these were just two different groups that followed two different prophets, not prophets, but learned priests in the faith. And eventually the Banat ones were the ones in Bulgaria, and then they later converted, and today are considered, I guess, a subgroup in Bulgaria. And there are still anywhere between 15 and 40,000, depending on where you get your sources from, of these people that descended from the Paulicians. And it's in a very very twisted version of irony and historical fate. Even the Pomox, which is basically a Slavic, considered a Slavic group that converted to Islam during the Ottoman period, the Pomox are considered to even be, they're considered to be the Paulicians that converted to Islam. And it is among the Pomox, descendants of the Pomox, is Talat Pasha, the orchestrator of the Armenian Genocide. So, Talat Pasha is possibly or quite probably of Paulician origin at some point before his family was either forcibly or otherwise converted to Islam during the Ottoman invasion of Bulgaria. So,
unreal. Unreal.
It's really a crazy, but they ended up in a few different places. Most of the Paulicians ended up becoming Catholics once they went to Bulgaria because they had no major qualms with the Catholic Church. They had a lot more qualms with the Orthodox Church. So they, a lot of them just became Catholics by that decree. But really what's interesting is the Paulicians influenced multitudes of European Gnostics in the centuries to come, like the Cathars, who we hear so much about in things like the Da Vinci Code and all these Crusader legends and all these legends about the Holy Grail and all this other stuff. A lot of these groups, these Gnostic sects, drew directly from the Paulicians in their attempts to sort of purify or return the church to an older version, a less icon-related version of the church. And even the Protestant Reformation of the 16th century, Martin Luther and John Calvin and all that stuff against the Catholic Church, is a direct is directly influenced by the Paulician teachings of many, many, many centuries before. So it's really turned out to be a very interesting sort of what's been considered like a little footnote in Byzantine history, but the Armenian connection to it is rarely understood fully, considering that all these people were basically Armenian.
Well, you know what, Danny? It's interesting because two shows ago, I had Vahan Setyan. Were you able to listen to that show?
I haven't listened to it yet, but I'm a big fan of Vahan Setyan, and I like a lot of the stuff he's done on Neolithic linguistic origins. I think that he's got the finger on the pulse of a lot of stuff that even 20 years ago people... Well, we're shooting down as nonsense, and then today with things like the genetic record and the archaeological record being uncovered in Armenia, a lot of his works and his theories are becoming much, much more accepted within academia, and I think that he is underrepresented in his very high understanding of Armenian history. I'm a big fan.
Right, and Vahan made it clear that. You know what? We don't know what could have happened. My question to you is this. What could have happened to the Armenians if Christianity, I just see it as possibly, in my mind, I think it would have been, we would have turned into Islamic. I think we would have been a part of Islam if we didn't convert to Christianity. I think that I understand what Vahan's saying, but if we don't turn into Christianity, if we don't become Christians, what would we have become? Maybe like Kurds or nomads traveling as no country, no culture.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's altogether possible. It's important to note that there's a lot of really. There's a lot of real gray area here when it comes to what would have happened. And the only reason I say that is because the Christological debates themselves, the very debates that I'm talking about that occurred anywhere between 300, 400 and 900 years after Armenia converts to Christianity, these Christological debates that both victimized the Armenian church and put the Armenian church in a certain hierarchical position also, you know, diluted or cut down the overall Armenian population. So really, I believe that the independent Armenian church is probably what kept the Armenians as a homogenous group. Because it wasn't simply Christianity that I think could have kept the Armenians Armenian, so to speak. Hmm. And there's so many erroneous things about this topic, but just to delve into it a little bit, had the Armenians become Catholic, do you believe they would have retained their Armenian identity? And it's a rhetorical question, but you know, the vast majority of Armenians that became Catholic, let's use the Paulicians as an example. After they had been forced to give up their creed, because they were considered heretics by so many people, the Greek Orthodox, the Armenians, everybody considered these Paulicians heretics, they forced them to convert, basically, to Catholicism and to other forms. These Paulicians basically lost their Armenian identity the moment they became Catholic, and suddenly they were Bulgarians. So it wasn't the fact that they had moved to Bulgaria that made them Bulgarians. They retained their Armenian identity before that. But once they became Catholic, which, by the way, is not the main religion of Bulgaria, it's Eastern Orthodoxy, it just changed their overall ethnic identity. Today, Banat Bulgarians, who are the direct descendants of the Paulicians, do not consider themselves Armenian. Hmm. They're not anti-Armenian, but they don't consider themselves Armenian. So I believe that the Armenian conversion to, say, Islam, hypothetically, could have done the same thing as if we had converted to some other form of Christianity or Zoroastrianism before that, during the Persian period. So I don't know if it was necessarily the religion of Christianity itself or the fact that the Armenians, in their holy independence within their group, wanted to have their own Armenian church, separate from the Greeks, separate from the Latins, separate from the Syrians. That is, I think, what makes them stay Armenian, not the fact that they chose Christianity. In fact, I do believe, because if you use Armenian Muslim converts as an example, because you have to remember, almost as many Armenians, if not more, were forcibly converted to Islam over the various centuries, the Arab invasion, the Turkish invasions, the Turkoman invasions. So many people were Kurdified, Turkified, Arabified, forced to convert to Islam. But if you use those as an example, the vast majority of Armenians who were forced to convert, converted to heterodox forms. They didn't convert overwhelmingly to the hierarchical Sunni creed. They would oftentimes convert to these not bizarre, but kind of more off-brand creeds of Islam, like Alevism and like the Hashemis and all these different groups. They became Muslim, but they didn't follow the strict sort of original version of Islam. They followed a version that was already different in order to maintain their Armenianness. Right. Yes, to maintain some sort of Armenianness. The Hamshenis today in Turkey, the ones who had converted to Islam in the 16th century, mostly escaped the genocide and continue to live in Turkey today. They're the largest Armenian population in Turkey today. And although a lot of post-Ataturk literature tried to push the Hamshenis out of their Armenian culture, a lot of the Hamshenis to this day understand and retain the fact that they're somehow Armenian. And they're Muslim. So whereas these Catholic Armenians in Bulgaria have firmly become Bulgarians. So I don't know if it's necessarily Christianity over Islam, and this is no offense to any of my Armenian Christian brothers and all of that thing. I just think from a historical standpoint, I think the Armenians would have maintained some kind of Armenianness no matter what, and there's a few examples of Christianity not necessarily guaranteeing their Armenianness, like when they became Catholics, for instance. So, or in the Byzantine Empire, where so many Armenians took on the Chalcedonian Rite, which is the Greek Orthodox Rite, because the last few centuries of the Byzantine Empire, and this is a whole separate talk that I'm going to do sometime, almost all the Byzantine emperors were Armenian. They just followed the Greek Orthodox faith, and they took on a very Greek sort of culture and lifestyle. They were trying to become the last vestiges of sort of the Eastern Roman Empire, if you will. So, you know, a lot of times they culturally took on other ways, even if they retained their Christianity. You know, so there's really, there can be a lot stated about that. I think the Armenianness itself was very retained in the pagan period, you know, and there's not a lot of talk of people saying if they remained pagan, what would have happened, you know, but it does get, you know, some historiography is It's discussed on some historiographical level, you know.
It's definitely interesting what was and what could have, you know. But to me, I think that whatever it was, though, as Armenians, we have to embrace what it was and what we are as a whole now as well. We can't pick and choose. Like right now, you'll see Armenians saying, "Oh, we were the first people to have wine." Well, that was before Christianity, right?
Oh yeah, a long time before.
Okay,
Christianity,
so
yeah.
We bring that up and we glorify it, but we don't bring up anything else in that time as well. So
right.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a catch-22. We got to bring up everything that comes with that period as well.
I think so, too, and I think the Paulicians are kind of a good example of that, because they were like this sort of despised sect that everybody kind of hated, but they're an interesting footnote in the history of reforming religion in modernity, you know, trying to reform things as time goes on and trying to understand it in a more modern complex. They represent a very interesting period of time, very ahead of their time. This is, you know, this is like 900 years before Martin Luther. So huge, huge influence on the later sort of Reformation movement things that went on. And as Armenians, we should be proud of that as well as we should be proud of the pagan traditions, the Armenian Christian traditions, our
right.
alphabet, you know, everything that even these Byzantine emperors who were all Armenian. We can't blame our ancient ancestors for the fact that nationalism didn't exist yet, you know.
Right.
There was, you know, so there was no nationalism in these days. Nationalism didn't really exist. There were other isms, Hellenism, the certain cultural things that were sort of related to peoples and places, but were really an amalgamation of experiences and contacts between people. And I think that the Armenian church is a major source of pride, as well as our alphabet. And those are probably the things that maintained a lot of our distinctiveness. You know,
right.
the fact that we chose, okay, we're going to be Christian, but we're going to be Armenian Christians.
Right.
And I think that's, as long as we stayed Armenian, fill in the blank afterwards, then I think we would have been okay, just as long as we had maintained that Armenianness.
I think, Danny, the way I presented Vahan on the write-up, I think I didn't do him justice. I brought it in as the downfall of Christianity was, let's say, the downfall of Armenia, could it have been Christianity? And Vahan goes into it. I think that's what I brought up, and I don't think that was fair for me to put it like that. I think we have to embrace it as before Christianity, this is what happened, not put it together, not make it complex in the situation to where saying it to where it's kind of like one against the other now, because that era's gone, no matter how you look at it.
Right.
So
right, definitely.
So I think
he's a.
Yeah.
I think that is. They're both good points. I think he's both really a brilliant theorist in terms of what he has done with linguistics. His linguistic knowledge is understated. Very, very brilliant in terms of ancient Armenian linguistics and really filling in a lot of the gaps to the Proto-Armenian language. And also, I think that, but your point about the conversion of Christianity being the beginning of the downfall, I mean, it's a debate that has rocked Armenian historiography for decades. And I think it's something that could never be truly proven or disproven. But in the time of the Parthian Empire, we converted to Christianity, 301 AD. And Armenian history, one thing that can be postulated as correct is that Armenian history would never be the same again upon that conversion to Christianity. But I think that it is of equal importance to our great pagan history as well. And I think that you almost can't have one without the other, at least when you look at it from a modern context. We as Armenians today, we wouldn't be who we are without the pagan or the Christian tradition. Because as you said, so many of our great discoveries, the first leather shoe, the first winery, all these archaeological complexes, the early astrological complexes, the early sun worship and all these things, we wouldn't be the same Armenians without that. So much of our symbolism, so much of our symbology, the symbols that we carry with us come from that period. And at the same time, our Christianity, our values, are a huge part of what make our personalities Armenian as well. I think it's really a balance between the sort of mighty pagan glory period and of the Christian period of trying to be good Christians and good people and kind to others and follow those sort of, you know, those sort of mores of the original apostolic faith. So I think that they're both really, really important parts of what make us Armenian.
Right, right. Bravo, Danny. That's good stuff, man. I loved it. Brian, what'd you think, man?
That was incredibly fascinating.
It really was.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dad. And you know what? That really enlightens me to think a different perspective. I heard Vahan's perspective, and you know, you think maybe Vahan maybe he's an atheist too that doesn't believe. But now you throw this, and you go, oh, I understand it a little bit better now. So you know, maybe that's what we need.
The historian's purpose is not to steep himself so much in belief, but to steep himself in the idea of understanding belief, no matter what that belief is. Yeah. I think that's probably a good way of putting it. You know.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Danny. And I tell you, our show isn't complete until we get one of your history lessons. So God bless.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
And you can catch Danny right now at DannyBedrosian.com. And all his shows are out there. He's headed to the West Coast. And we know we got a lot of listeners out there in the West Coast. And if you're out there and you got some free time, check out his site, DannyBedrosian.com, and check out one of his shows. Thank you so much, Danny.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Brian. Really appreciate it. Looking forward to doing it again.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, another great segment with Danny as well.
I loved it.
You know what? I always learn something Armenian with Danny.
I mean, you know me. You know I'm a big history guy.
Right.
And so, like, to find the you know, really specific history, you know, of just Armenia stuff, like, I always love it. I'm not even Armenian. I love Armenian history.
I'm telling you could be a 6'7 Armenian. You could be one of us. Croc. Last name Croc. We could turn you Crocyan.
Closest I got is Lithuanian.
Now you're Armenian. Krakyan. Now, if you're like from Armenia, though, you would be with a Y-A-N.
Yes.
And if so you're from the West, you would be the Krakyan that would be I-A-N.
Yeah.
Which one would you choose?
I'd probably go for the Y-A-N just because it's a little bit different.
Now, you see, if I was you, though, I would go with the I-A-N because then you could use that as an Irish type of setting, too.
True.
With the I-A-N.
Yeah,
like
Sebastian.
Like, and then you could use it as an IN. In any case, it was a great interview. Thank you so much, Danny. And folks, again, thank you so much for all the responses we're getting. Thank you for all the downloads. And God bless. Keep up all the stuff that you guys are doing out there, like Coach Vicken Eskijan out there. He's doing a great job. Danny, he's out in the West Coast. He's putting out tunes. Everyone out there that I talk to, you guys are all doing something productive. God bless all of you. And from the Armenia Proud, Genatset Kisher Party, we'll see you next time.
Tune in next week for another episode of A Toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian. Find the show online at armeniaproud.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation at facebook.com/armeniaproud or Twitter at armeniaproud. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.